Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Guaranty Trust Holding Company PLC Full Year 2021 Investors and Analysts Call. All participants are currently in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Also note that this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Segun Agbaje. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to 2021 results. I believe on the call with me today, I've got Miriam Olusanya, who's the Managing Director of the bank, and I've got Banji Adeniyi, who's the Group CFO. We have basically sent out the investor presentation. I think most people would have had it for about four or five days, and so we'll take it as read and straight to questions and answers. Chris, I'm ready for the first question.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touchtone phone or on the keypad on your screen. You will hear a confirmation tone that you have joined the queue. If you wish to withdraw your question, please press star and then two to remove yourself from the queue. Our first question is from Ngozi Odum of CardinalStone Partners. Please go ahead. Ngozi, your line is open. Would you like to ask your question, please?
Yes, good afternoon. Sorry for the delay. Thank you for having me on this call. I just want to ask a few questions to the management. We saw a decline, a yield decline on your investment securities. I just wanted to know, aside from the obvious reason, which was the decline in yields on your investment security, were there any other contributing factors? Secondly, I wanted to have an idea of the bank's outlook on its FX supply. We've seen recently the reduction in spending limits for cross-border payments. I wanted to know how this affects the bank in terms of its earnings on commissions. Also, when we look at the recent RTE 2000 FX ban by the CBN, I wanted to know how the bank intends to fund its FX need in the eventuality that the Apex Bank halts sales. That's it for now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ngozi. The first one's pretty simple. Yield decline, just like you rightly pointed out on our investment portfolio. Investment portfolio is down from about 12%. Investment securities is down from about 12% to about 4%. No other reason other than the fact that yields are declining, and that if you take that portfolio today, 57% of that portfolio is special bills at a yield of 0.5%. It's the obvious reason. In terms of outlook for FX supply, I don't think we've changed our outlook for FX supply. I think it's gonna be what it has been, which is, you know, IME is not really as buoyant as it used to be. If you're dropping card limits, it's not really because the outlook is any bleaker or gloom. It's just that you've got a buildup that has happened over the past, which you're trying to clean up. I'm not so sure I have any real negative outlook. I will also try and take your next question in addition to this, and forgive me if I elaborate sometimes. Maybe it'll just help clarify what other people are thinking. There are about five sources of FX supply, really. You have oil, you have non-oil, you have diaspora, you have FPI, FDI.
Ladies and gentlemen, we do apologize for the technical delay. Mr. Agbaje has rejoined us.
Okay. Sorry. Let me take it from there. I'm gonna answer the second and the third together. Forgive me if I repeat myself 'cause I don't know where I got caught up. When you think of the, there are like five kind of sources of FX today. You have CBN, which basically is kind of oil. Then you have diaspora flows. You have FPI, FDI, and then you have non-oil, which we're trying to push, which is what RT200 is. So RT200 is not only going to be, it's not going to be the only source of foreign exchange. You're going to have to, as banks, push all these other ones, non-oil, oil, diaspora, FPI, FDI. I don't think we'll ever get, like I was saying, to a point where the central bank will not supply FX into the market. But we cannot expect the central bank to be the only source of foreign exchange in the market. And then maybe what we'll start to see is what happens in a lot of other countries where the central bank also intervenes and is just one of the players in the market. And so I think that's where we'll get to. I don't have a negative outlook at all for FX inflows. If anything, if you take the current price of oil, apart from the subsidy which we pay in Nigeria, the outlook for FX inflows should actually be positive. I don't know if that's now answered your questions.
Yes, please, it has. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question is from Tunde Ogunleye of SBG Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the conference call and thank you for taking my question. My first question is related to the macro and asset quality. I don't know if you can hear me.
Sure.
Okay. So given the rise in crude oil price, I just wanted to know what this means for your exposure in the oil and gas sector. And also, you guided 10% loan growth. In which sector in particular are you seeking to try and to grow your loan book? And also just to find out the impact of CBN 100 for 100 policy on your loan book. And what percentage of your loan book do you have currently as intervention fund? And the next question is just to know what is driving in your other income line. What is driving that growth in your discounts and recoverable FX? And what does this line item mean? And the final one is just to ask for updates on the OLDCO structure. When should we be expecting the split in subsidiary reporting? And also, you've recently acquired Investment One. I'd probably like to know what the strategy you intend to drive growth in the pension and asset management space. And in the last call as well, you mentioned that you are in your 5-year strategic plan. You are accessing the agency banking model. Just to know if there's any update on that. I'll pause here for now. Thank you.
God, I hope I got all the questions, but if I didn't, please tell me the one I didn't answer. You talked about asset quality and oil and gas loans. So sorry, forgive me as well if I expatiate. Maybe it's a question other people have. Obviously, a higher oil price means that your oil and gas portfolio is looking better in terms of, but we never really had, even before this high oil price, our oil and gas book was okay. We always said that we only had one loan we worried about, which was ITO, which is going through a restructure. But generally, the answer is with a higher oil and gas price, the quality of that loan book improves. You're talking about new sectors. The sectors we like kind of remain the same. We still like retail. We like fast-moving consumables. After COVID, healthcare looks a little better, manufacturing is good, and telecommunications is still good. And so it's kind of the usual suspects. In terms of our holdco structure, which we told people we were going to get to, as you said, we've now bought a PFA and an asset management company. Unfortunately, this call is not long enough for me to take you through the strategy of the asset management company and PFA, but needless to say, what we've done is deliberately bought one that we can leverage. If you take our customer base as a bank, we have 25 million customers, which means that we have very, very good cross-selling opportunities across, and that's what you'll see that we will start to do. So a bank customer, we're going to try to convert you to also be an asset management customer, and we're also trying to get you to be a PFA customer. So it's all about cross-selling. But those are not the only businesses that are going to come online. We have an approval in principle for a payment company, which we hope in the next month or so you will see that we'll get to final license stage. We will start to consolidate, obviously, the PFA, the asset management company, by the end of quarter one. but we're still going through a lot of regulatory approvals. We're still trying to integrate. So I really think that you will see the full impact of the new businesses in the second half of the year, and we're going to use the first half of the year just settling the businesses down. I think those are the kind of questions I have. If I missed anyone in particular, I'd be happy to answer it if you'll give it to me again.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the clarification. So the other question is, what is driving the growth in discounts and recoverable effects under other income lines? And what does this line item mean? And second one, in the previous call.
In the previous call, you mentioned
that you were accessing the agency banking model. I just wanted to know if there's any updates on that currently.
Okay, let me start from agency banking. If I don't answer the first one correctly, Banju will dive in. Agency banking, you will see that we will actually get a little bit more. You see more, but let me put some clarification around this, because everybody talks about agency banking, but I still believe that the person that has the largest network is Salif, which has over 800,000 agents, and we will continue to leverage that. The second thing we're starting to find as we're going into the agency banking space is that the agents are doing more, they're multiple agents for everybody. So if a person tells you they have 100,000 agents, there are very few people who have exclusive. Those agents are serving telcos, they're serving 3, 4, 5 banks. So we're beginning to assess whether we can find agents outside of what you call traditional agent networks, and then continue to leverage the Salif one, which we find that most banks are just double counting anyway, and those agents don't have exclusives. So we are growing it, but that's our approach, and that's what we found as we've gone into it. In terms of other income, I think the big line there is remains our revaluation gain on our long position. Recoverables on that line was a recovery we made. The major one was $5 billion. From a loan we have called Reliance Hospital. I don't think there's any other thing. If you look at those two line items, it basically accounts for everything in other income.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. We ask that you please limit your questions to 3 at a time, and you're welcome to join the queue again. The next question is from Ronak Gadia of EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Shagan and team, and thanks for taking my questions today. My three questions are, firstly, on your guidance, it's being part of the improvement in profitability, I see, is being driven by the improvement in NIMS. I was just wondering if you could share a bit more thoughts around that, especially since the monetary policy environment still remains quite unconventional. So, you know, how realistic is the NIM improvement given the monetary policy environment? My second question is on your growth outlook, particularly, you know, when I look at your growth last year, it seems like you're losing market share, you know, on the asset side and liability side. Your growth was a bit lower, below peer average. So could you comment on why that was and what strategy are you implementing to turn that around, given that the growth outlook for this year seems quite aggressive? And the third question is on your capital ratios. Could you just outline what your capital adequacy ratios are on the Basel III basis, and if the dividend payout ratio will be maintained as you migrate to the new regulatory environment? Thank you.
Okay. Let me start from the top, and then I'll give back you to tell me Basel III when I get there, where we are. Your first question was NIM outlook, why we see a pickup or we think it'll pick up. We don't believe that the current environment is sustainable. When we look at our own book today, 60% of our LCY is in CR and special bills. And as you can see, that has given us basically a drop in our asset yield from 11 to 8%. This, we believe, is an aberration and is not sustainable, and that ultimately you'll have to see a pickup in interest rates, and that once that happens, you'll see some yield enhancement. We've done with cost of funds, I think, as good as we can do at about 0.9, but we do expect that there will be some pickup in fixed income yields, or there'll be a reduction in CR and special bills, which we'll be able to put into loans. And that is 60% in CRR and special bills is not sustainable, and that we will be able to go into higher earning assets. And that's where our NIM pickup will come from in our guidance. In terms of growth, first, let me start with where on the loan side, we're going from 8% to 10%. So that's not very aggressive. That's just 2%. And we think we can do that quite easily. In terms of deposits, we're going from 14% to 25%. And let me comment on what is a bit different about us. When you say peer average, we actually don't see it as a loss of market share. We see it as the position we've taken in relation to risk. And that every time you're growing your loan book a bit aggressively, in what has not been the most buoyant of environments, you're going to pick up the NPLs in the future. So we can grow the loan book a lot more aggressively, but we don't want NPLs in the future. And we think that in terms of quality loan growth, about 8 to 10% is where you can pitch and not pick up NPLs. So it's not a market share loss. I think it's a deliberate decision to have a quality loan book. Again, if I go to deposits, you have to see what type of deposits people are growing. If you take our mix, we're 86% low interest bearing, 14% interest bearing. If we wanted to change that mix, we could grow this deposit base to whatever you want it to be, because we would just go into a battle, into a yield battle. We would increase our time deposits, we'll increase our cost of funds, we will assail the NIM, and would have done it for no reason. So it's not a loss of market share. We are a low cost operator where deposits are concerned, and we think that about 14% is okay. We are ramping up our retail base. We have 25%. We have a very aggressive target for 2022 in terms of customer acquisition. So we think we can increase the deposit base through customer acquisition without increasing our cost of funds or assailing our mix. So not a market share thing, deliberate strategy as to how we want to play deposits and how we want to play risk assets. In terms of dividends, no, we're going to keep where we are, which is dividend, our dividend payout ratio is around 50 to 60%, and we're going to stay with that. There's nothing that we see today that's going to make us change that. And if something comes up, I'm sure we might advise it at half year. In terms of Basel III, I'll let Banji just give me the figure, but one thing I can tell you is that Basel III will not have a significant impact on our capital, because 97% of our capital is Tier 1. But Banji, can you tell me quickly what Basel III impact will have on capital adequacy from the 23 tiers today?
Okay, sir. Thank you. For Basel III, when we sensitize our capital position, we actually close with full impact of 21.5%. Transitional arrangement which fall away by December 2021, we close 24.09%. This is over and above 16% requirement by CBN. So we're pretty good.
Okay. So I hope that answers it. So Basel III, because we're not gonna have a significant impact, because about 97% of our capital is Tier 1. So maybe we'll lose about 1.5%.
Thank you very much. The next question is from Tuyosi Oni of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, and thank you very much for taking my questions. My first question is around your acquisition of Investment One. Do you mind sharing the deal considerations on this transaction? And as the acquiries are quite small, are we expecting further M&A from GTCo, or will you? I mean, you did mention your cross-selling. Is it a thoroughly organic strategy that you'll be using here? My second question is on the PSB licenses and what this means for the competitive environment. I wanted to just dig a little bit deeper into the alternative agency banking strategy that you mentioned, and how this would go in tandem with what you're going to do with SANEF as well. My third question is about the sinking fund that CBN introduced last year. I just wanted to ask your thoughts on what this means for the industry and how GTCO is positioning for this. Essentially, what is your estimated amount that you will set aside in the next 3 to 5 years as part of this sinking fund? I'll stop here for now. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, I'm just scribbling very quickly. I write really badly. In terms of the first one, you know, we still have some reconciliation. We have a clawback, but it's about $8 billion, the consideration for both of them, give or take. It'll be around that region after we take all the clawbacks. Is it going to be organic? Early days. We've bought a small business intentionally. We found that when you buy things, until you get in there, do you really understand some of the intricate things? And it's always better to start small and have an organic strategy for cross-selling, which, because we have that advantage and we have that luxury. But we'll have to wait and see whether we want to do any other thing in terms of further acquisitions. But for today, it's not on the plans. We'll see what happens as we finish the strategic plan for the two businesses. In terms of PSB threat, it remains a threat, but is not as daunting, I think, as people make out, because the banks have done very well. The banks today have over 50 million unique customers. Also, PSB is very different from telco banking. You're going to have to keep some financial ratios. You're going to have to operate like a bank does, and so people will have to learn that. The banking system also has a very wide agency network today, be it SADF, be it individual, which will allow them to compete. There are also switching advantages the banks are going to be able to create, which will allow them to also compete very effectively. For those who understand the Zelle model, I won't say more than that, but those are advantages the banks have, as you've seen in America when it comes to switching transactions. In terms of alternative agency network to SALF, there are non-traditional agency networks that you can leverage that are not what you see today. I'd rather keep that to myself for now, but there are people in different industries who have built an agency network that you can collaborate with and use going into the future. In terms of the sinking fund, I wish I could give you more color on that. We basically haven't been advised of a sinking fund amount. We haven't paid anything to a sinking fund other than Ag Smith, as far as I know. So not sure I can say too much about that.
Thank you very much, sir. The next question is from Landre Buluro of Chapel Hill, Denham. Please go ahead. Landre, your line is open. Would you like to ask your question? Unfortunately, we cannot hear you. Could you please just reconnect and check your microphone settings? The next question is from Sodiq Ferio of Meristem. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon.
Yep, good afternoon.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. So I would just love to know what the exposure of the group's exposure to intervention fund, and I would also like to know what to think about the CBN extension for the forbearance of intervention fund to continue at 5%. So what's the exposure, and what do you think, how do you think it will affect the loan book of GTCO? Thank you.
Okay, I think our exposure is about 150 billion, 150, 154 billion, something like that. So as you can see, our group exposure is 1.8, so it's not that significant. 5% forbearance, as far as I'm concerned, is a good thing. We are still in challenging macros. We haven't really come out of everything that COVID's going to throw at us. And in addition to that, now we have Ukraine and Russia to worry about, which will also have some implications. I think if you look at our books last year, whatever the 5% is going to do to us has already been happened. So I don't really see any negative outlook to the 5% because we ran that for the whole of last year. Like I said, it's about 150 billion of our entire book of 1.8 trillion.
Thank you very much. The next question is from Wale Okundrumboye of Sigma Pensions. Please go ahead.
Right. Good afternoon. Thank you for the call. I have a few questions. First, on your general welfare expense line, I see a big jump there. And I think the explanation of your presentation has something to do with staff loans. So I just try to understand what's going on there. What's the rate at which you're lending staff? And what drove that 60% jump in general welfare expenses? My second question is on your tax-exempt income, because I can see your effective tax rate a bit higher in 2021. And just try to also segue into what the finance tax, how you think the finance tax would sort of, sorry, the finance act will sort of impact taxes for you going forward. And a few questions on them. So I see there was a CBN fine on betting and gaming company. Maybe you can just talk through what that's about really. And that's all. Thank you.
Okay. Let me take the last one. When a regulator gives you a fine, you take it. As far as we know, we were the settlement bank for like two or three betting companies. Apparently, these betting companies use these monies to buy certain FX from certain banks. And because we were the settlement bank, supposedly, we should have tracked where those monies were going after they left us. And so we didn't argue. We took the fine. We didn't sell these people any FX, but we were their settlement bank for their betting proceeds. And so that's what the fine is all about. You said the first one was general welfare. Yes, what has happened is in the subsidiaries outside of Nigeria, they used to lend to staff at commercial rates, but that's not what we do. What we do in Nigeria, which we've taken outside Nigeria, is that staff, one of the benefits is you'll lend to at a subsidized rate, and that subsidized rate is 5%. And I believe that's what you see that kicked in. It's the subsidy between their commercial rates and the staff rates of 5%, which will differ from environment to environment since the commercial rates are different. Our tax rate, like you said, is 21.5. If you're talking about the Finance Act and the portion of it you might be referring to, I hope I'm correct, is when you start to pay interest on investment securities such as treasury bills. For us, the impact is going to be about 1.5%. So we reckon it'll add about 1.5% to our effective tax rate. And the reason is very simple. If you look at our investment securities portfolio, 57% of it is special bills at 0.5. So the impact is not going to be as bad as it would have been a couple of years ago when about 90% of that portfolio was Nigerian government 90-180-day bills with yields of like 15, 16, 17%. So the impact has actually been quite muted by what the makeup of that is. And so maybe the Finance Act will give us another 1.5% in our effective tax rate.
Thank you.
I hope that answered the questions.
Thank you very much, sir. The next question is from Adesoji Solanke of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Shah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Very well.
Okay. Good afternoon. Thanks for the call. I have a few questions. The first one is maybe just on the PFA and asset management deal. How can you just talk us through how you got comfort on the valuation you paid for the asset? My sense is people might look at it and think it's expensive, but that view is probably because you're looking at historical numbers. So is your comfort around the fact that you taking a strategic stake in this company, now you can cross-sell and there's more room to extract value from the asset. Is that how you're thinking about it? So that's my first question. And the second question is just more around Habari Pay. So what's driving the delay in getting the final approval? And maybe if you can give us any sort of color around what exactly you're looking to do within payments. And the third thing is around your comments on the cash reserve ratio and also your expectations that interest rates would rise. I mean, I get it that this is your expectation, but, and I think this view has been on for some time that interest rates would rise, but that's not been the case. Well, why do you think this year will be different? So just, I'm just trying to gauge your degree of confidence around your guidance on the margin outlook. And maybe just one quick number question is just your number of customers of 25 million, what percentage of that would you say is active? And how do you define active? Thanks.
Okay. Let me start with PFA asset management valuation. I like what you've already said. You can take a strategic position and your valuations are down to what you want to do. If we had wanted to pay less for these businesses, we wouldn't have bought them 100%, because then we would have had a bigger discount, because the people we bought it from would have a chance to benefit from the upside. So when you're looking at acquisitions and how much people pay, a critical thing to look at is whether they bought 100% of the business or they bought less than 100%. Because if you buy less than 100%, you get a discount because the person benefits from the upside. So from our perspective, not only does it give us a strategic foothold, we actually think we paid a very reasonable price, because in this negotiation, we got 100%, which is not what they wanted to sell to us. And I wouldn't have wanted to sell us 100%, because it means you don't benefit from the upside. And I think when you're doing valuations of assets, that's a critical thing that happens at the point of closure, whether you acquire 100% of the asset or less than 100%. In terms of Habari Pay, I wouldn't say there's any real delay on Habari Pay, to be honest. We got the AIP in November. The Habari Pay format, or the licensing format, is very similar to a bank. When you have gotten to what you consider a state of readiness, you then call or write to the regulator, who then decides to comes in and assesses your state of readiness, and that's where we are. So from the point of your AIP to your final license, you have to have an inspection that says all your systems are ready to go, and that's where we are. So I wouldn't really call it massive delay if AIP was in November, because then you have to then get ready, all your processes have to go live, your office has to go live, your hiring has to go live, your systems have to have been tested before you invite the regulator in for an assessment for a final license. We've done that already. The thing about interest rates, everybody has to take a position, and you have to determine whether you believe that in a country with an inflation about 15.6, NTBs of 4% make sense. I don't believe they do. I also do not believe that as a country, we need interest rates to be at 4%. It's just that for whatever reason, people are choosing to buy, for example, one-year NTBs of 4%. And my sentiment is that as liquidity leaves the system, the NTBs and the interest rate will track back up maybe 400 basis points, because I'm not even sure the country expects to borrow at 4%, but if people are buying it at 4%, it means that we have a liquidity overhang, which I suspect at some point must go. And if that liquidity overhang goes, and for as long as you're running a deficit budget, the interest rates will trend up. So I'm pretty confident that they have to, because it's a bit illogical where interest rates are at the moment. Sorry, I didn't quite get your last numbers question. Sorry, Soji, what was it again?
That was a question around active customers and how you
define them. Oh, yeah. About over 50%, we're about 13 million active customers, and active customers means that you did one transaction over a 30-day period.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from Samuel Oshunuga of Cardinals Law Partners. Please go ahead. Samuel, your line is open. Would you like to ask your question?
Hello. Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity to ask questions. So, sir, earlier you did say that you do not think that the current environment is sustainable. But however, what strategy do you, have in place for dealing with a case where the status quo persists, especially on the CRR debit? Secondly, in 2021, we saw banks taking advantage of credit to pricing opportunities. Were there certain pricing opportunities that you found suitable? How did that play across your loan book? And were there any sector-specific considerations aside from overall market, behavior? Just going back to your customer deposits, we see a 48% year-on-year growth in the relatively more expensive term deposits compared to a 10% growth in current and savings accounts. Is this something that bothers you, or are we seeing some tenure shift in deposit acquisition strategy? In your sectoral analysis of non-performing loans, we see that the size of the individual bracket grew from 19.5% to 21.2%, and this is despite the fact that the quick credit and the easily accessible payday loans have been scaled back. But generally, how will this guide your play in digital consumer lending space, especially given the fact that this is quite a that's quite a condensed competitive structure. Still on asset quality, could you give us some causality insights into the drop in gross loans granted to the manufacturing sector? I believe the percentage of loans you granted in 2021 dropped by 5%, that is to the manufacturing sector. Lastly, your PBT projections show that you expect non-banking businesses to begin to contribute, and then you project a 2% contribution to PBT. Could you give us some insight as to which of the banking entity, which of the non-banking entities you project to drive a majority of these contributions? And generally, what would you say are your most prudential timelines for these non-banking businesses to begin to consequentially contribute to bottom line performance of the group? Thank you very much.
God, sorry, that's a lot of questions. So please, if I missed any or if I miss any, you can please ask me again. You said, first of all, let me start from, if I understand, the repricing. You said interest rate strategy and repricing opportunities. Well, I really didn't see a lot of, if anything, the repricing opportunities we saw in 2021 were downwards, at least for the good names, with intervention funds at 5% and large CRR debits. The real opportunities were actually with the good names to reprice downwards and not reprice upwards. So I wouldn't have called them opportunities, actually. I would have called it a bit of a downside. In terms of deposit composition, we are not, like I said, we're a low-cost operator. So if you see the term deposits going up, it's not what we want. And so it's not a shift in strategy at all. It probably shows you when a system is a bit illiquid and when you see a bit of a crowding out where certain banks are paying higher interest rates, or even asset management or insurance companies are paying higher rates. So what we're doing is just trying to compete and stay a bit liquid. We will never be pushing term deposits as a strategy, and that's why I emphasized in the beginning what our mix is. In terms of retail NPLs, they're up. But it's the nature of retail. And what we track anyway is that we make sure that we are still making more money than we're providing. And since your retail loans are decently priced, we are. So we're not pulling back at all. Retail remains a significant part of our strategy going forward, and we will continue to push it, but we'll continue to watch. And when you talk about like digital consumer lending, we're still very much in there, but what we've learned how to do is tweak from the artificial AI we're doing. We're beginning to see a trend where we're seeing defaults, and so we will tweak some of the criteria for qualification, and that's what you're seeing. But we are still very much in that business, but we're using our AI more efficiently, and we believe in the long run it'll help us bring down the NPLs. Loans to manufacturing sector, I'm not sure we deliberately put them down. Sometimes it's just a case of other sectors are growing faster, and so that brings your own down, but we still like the manufacturing sector, so it was nothing deliberate. Maybe we just had a pickup in other sectors last year, but it's still very much a focus. You talk about the non-banking subsidiaries. First of all, what I'd like to tell you, our own approach to every business is that it's a marathon, not a 100-meter dash. And that when we went into subsidiaries banking outside Nigeria, this is how we took it. We took it kind of 1 year at a time. And today, if you look at 2021, is 23.5% of group. So that's the same approach. So we're going to start with 10%. We're going to try to understand what we're getting into. We have a fairly good idea. We think both the PFA and asset management businesses are going to contribute almost equally, maybe 60-40. And then we will see what the payment business does for us. I've also told anybody who would listen to us that we are going to run a profitable payment business. Our model is not going to be one of just growing transaction volumes and then burning equity. So our payment business will contribute. So I'd say what you call significant, you know, depends on, it's a relative term, significant. But we're starting, we're aiming to do 2% in about 6 months of operations. By next year, I'm sure we'll up it, and that's how we'll keep going until where we get to where we want to go to. In about 5 years, we have an amount that we believe non-banking subsidiaries should account for group income. But we do think 2% is a good start for 2022.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, just again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. And we ask that you please limit your questions to three at a time. The next question is from Lanre Boluro of Chapel Hill Denham. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Shagun. I wasn't quite clear. I couldn't hear the consideration on the asset management and the PFA, and if you can actually give specific on each business and also what the AUMs for each business is. And then you did say you're quite, you know, happy or bullish about, you know, manufacturing and FMCG into this year, but with Ukraine and what's happening, you know, the commodity prices going up, any concerns around, you know, some of your clients that are highly dependent on this imported, you know, so your millers, for example, and, you know, maybe some other, you know, grain type importers who need those inputs to run their businesses locally, and how you're looking at that, or how you plan for the fallout for Ukraine, with your business. Thank you.
Okay. On the first question, like I said, we will give you your AUM figures when we publish half year. So I would rather not disclose them at this point, because many things we're doing are still subject to a lot of due diligence. And so I'd rather keep it till we're done with really understanding. We kind of close these deals in February. This is March. And so it'll be early days for me to be giving out that kind of information until I'm completely clear what those figures are. Then if I go to Ukraine and Russia and what's happening to FMCGs, and I really think that's going to affect more than just FMCGs. I think everybody ultimately, if this continues to happen, will be affected, because you'll have supply chain issues. Not only will you have supply chain issues, you will have inflation issues, you will have freight issues. So we're all going to have to adjust, and this is going to, it's going to take a bit more strategy than, it's not just FMCG or manufacturing. Anything we import will be affected by both inflation and the freight. The other thing, I told Soji, we paid $8 billion for these two businesses. You will get more color on what the AMUs are at half year. I also just wanted to make a correction. In speaking too fast, our description or definition of active customers is you do one transaction a year, which I wanted to correct in an earlier Soji question.
Thank you. Then the next question is from Timothy Wambu of APSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Shagun and team. Thank you for taking the call. Just a couple of questions. The first one is the outlook for the cost environment for GTCo in 2022. I see you are quite bullish on your guidance, expecting your cost income ratio to dip to 35%. Could you speak about the likely impact of the surge in diesel prices, you know, how that might impact on your overall cost environment? This is generally the cost of fuel. The second question is, maybe just give a comment on the risk of further CRR debits, given that you're clearly guiding that loan growth growing by only 10% while deposits are growing by about 25% for FY22. And maybe tied to that is, do you expect an increase in demand from the upstream oil and gas borrowers? Is that something that you're able to target in the course of this year? And then just lastly, on Habari Pay, is it only going to be in Nigeria? Just speak about its capabilities and who are its competitors. Thank you.
Okay, let me just take Habari Pay since that's the last one. I won't have to then write it down. If I look at Habari Pay, it's the one of the new businesses that I think will go out first, and we will go into two regions. We will go into Ghana and we'll go to Kenya, and that's where we'll go. So we're going to go out. When we look at who the competitors are, when we look at that space, we think it's Paystack and Flutterwave that are the competition. I think those are the two biggest and most successful, and that's kind of where we'll benchmark. Your question on cost outlook, honestly, I think you've got a really good point. We're beginning to see, just like I told Larry earlier on, that Ukraine, Russia is bringing inflation and things that we all never saw. I think that if you look at what diesel prices are doing, so yes, it's going to kind of threaten our cost to income ratio. We're going to have to hope that we can also, that inflation also helps us drive the revenue side. But yes, it is going to make it a bit more challenging in regards to meeting that target, because we are seeing a lot of inflation coming in. CRR growth, we don't expect any more CRR growth. We're at 37% CRR. When we look at our competitors and the pay average, we really think we are as high as really we should be. The one thing we're not sure about, though, is whether we'll get more special bills. But in terms of CRR, I think we're very comfortable. There will be demand coming from the upstream sector, especially at this type of oil price. Whether we will choose to take advantage of it is another thing. We will look very carefully, make sure that the demand and the price of fossil fuels can be sustained. And if it can be, as we have pay downs, we might look at doing some transactions. But we are clearly not looking to increase the percentage of our upstream book to the total. But we know that our loans are performing well and that we will have pay downs. And in that regard, for as long as we like the outlook, we might replace that. I don't know if that's answered your questions.
Yes, it has. So there's definitely demand. But just to go back to the earlier question on the potential pickup in your costs. So realistically, given the surge that we've seen in diesel cost, maybe for myself, for instance, who I'm not aware, is what percentage of your branches rely on diesel generators? Is that something that you're willing to share?
I think almost all, but there are little things we do to kind of, obviously we alternate between like solar inverters, regular power from the grid and diesel, and we have different strategies, we have different closing times, we have ways that we try to manage the cost. So it's looked at very closely. We actually have a whole department here that deals with those things. So we will try to keep the cost as much as we can under control. But the truth is that cost to income ratio is not going to happen if we don't push the revenues. If you look at 2021, our cost inflation is not really coming from that anymore. Our cost inflation is really coming from regulatory cost and depreciation cost. So if we can kind of control our part of it, things like depreciation and regulatory costs are a bit out of our control. But for us to do this, the clear message I will give you is that we must increase the revenue side of it for the cost to income ratio to kind of do what we want.
Thank you, sir. The next question is from Sahil Kumar of Moon Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for the call. The previous callers asked my question. Just one question from my side is on the margin front. So could you please tell us incrementally what's the margin you are making on your on the loan side, and obviously the cost of funding you already highlighted. So on the loan side, if you can tell us what kind of a margin you are making on the new loans.
Well, you know, the total asset yield, which I will take as a basket, really is at about 8%. And the loan book is made up of different things. So, but if I had to just take it off the top of my head and I took a spread between the cost and everything, you're probably around 6 to 8% in total. But then you'd have to take the entire basket of retail, corporate, and SME.
Thank you, sir. The next question is from Seki Mutukwa of Ashmore Group. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, Shegun. Hope you can hear me.
Yes, I can.
Perfect. Thank you. Just wanted to ask about how one thinks of the links in your compensation to the non-banking growth or perhaps sort of KPIs in, let's say, in a three-year period. So my assumption being for GTB, if you will, clearer cut in terms of already profitable, one of the best in the country, if not region. But then when you expand into these newer businesses, what then happens in terms of the sort of the compensation, trying to understand, is it linked more to net asset value growth over a three-year period, profitability in a particular timeline? Any sort of sense of color you can give if there is a difference between the GTCO hat versus the GTB hat, please. Thank you.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm hoping. Well, the bank has its CEO, and I'm Holdco CEO. And so I would say that the key is the philosophy of everything we do remains the same, which is we're not going to go into any business and not have cost, not have efficiency at the forefront. And that's why when I was asked the question about are there more acquisitions, we're not just going to buy things for the sake of it. We're going to continue to look at the cost to income ratios. We're going to continue to look at the ROEs of these businesses. And that's part of what has taken us into them. Because when I look at the ROEs of a lot of PFA businesses that are successful, they're in the 40s. So they started to do better than the banks. So from a compensation standpoint, I think you will find that the ROE targets and the cost to income targets and the efficiency ratios will be very, very similar, if not a bit more stringent than what we have in the bank, because the bank is even a bigger, it's a bigger operation today. So even the level of efficiency we can squeeze out of it is limited. It's finite today. But these businesses are still small, so we believe we can squeeze a lot of efficiency out of them. So all I can tell you is that you will see the same philosophy towards how we run those businesses, no different from how we've run the bank.
Thank you, sir. The next question is from Ngozi Udom of Cardinal Stone. Please go ahead.
After my questions.
I've answered them, sorry. Or do you have another one? Sorry?
They've been answered. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, then just a reminder, if you do wish to remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and then two. If you wish to ask a question, please press star and one. Next question then is from Ronak Gadia of EFG Earnings. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just a couple of follow-ups. Firstly, just going back to the discussion on loan growth, your target this year is around 10%. Which means in real terms, the book is still shrinking given where inflation is. And when I look at your numbers, it seems like, you know, the book has been shrinking in real terms since around 2013, 2014. Would you just maybe share your thoughts on why that is and when can we see maybe a pickup in real terms? The second question is on your fee income outlook. Last year was pretty strong. You've spent already quite a lot of time talking about the pension fund management business, the payments business. Given those initiatives, can we expect the momentum that we saw last year to continue into this year as well? Just those questions for now. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Look, I think you're going to see the momentum, and that's what the reason we're very comfortable about the way this business is operating today is that outside of what is happening to NIMs, which we know are muted because of CRR and special bills, the business itself is growing. And this is an activity-based business. And just like you pointed out, commissions and fees grew 40%. And that's the type of momentum we're going to continue to push. And once we continue to see that kind of activity, we're very comfortable about what is happening and that the growth is there. And that as we start to cycle out of CR and special bills into higher earning assets, then the interest income will pick up. I have to tell you that I will never ever, maybe it's a personal thing, judge my loan growth by the rate of inflation. I will always take my loan growth and look at what the risk in the environment is. We will grow this loan book to the point where we're comfortable about the risk that we see. I don't think there's any point setting a loan growth target that we achieve, but then leads to subsequent NPLs. So for now, when we look at the macros and we look at what's happening around us, we think 10% is a good place to be. If the system looks like it's de-risking further, then we will grow the loan book to a point where we think we're comfortable again. So I can't really answer the question to you as to when we will grow beyond the rate of inflation. I think that will happen at a point where we think the system is sufficiently de-risked, where we can grow the loan book above the rate of inflation.
Thank you very much, sir. The next question is from Adesoji Solanke of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just a few follow-up questions. The first one is just on Habari Pay. So for the license you applied for, is this a switching and processing license? And if so, what other plans do you have beyond, should I say, classic online acquiring, which you mentioned for Flutterwave and Paystack? So things like PTSP, bill aggregation, etc., which the license allows you to do, or even switching. So that's my first question around how about the license. The second question is on PSBs. We often talk a lot about the competitive risks, which is understandable, but what room exists to collaborate? And how are you thinking about the collaboration with the PSBs? The third question is on the AMCON levy. What do you think happens there? Because if I'm not mistaken, the tenure should expire probably next year. Any chance that it gets reduced or does it go away? You know, what are your thoughts on the AMCON levy? And just one final thing, any risk of the central bank reducing the tariffs one more time? Because there was some announcement this year that they've reduced it. But if you look into the detail, nothing actually changed. So is there something likely to come out again from the central bank? What's your thoughts there? Thanks.
Okay, let me answer kind of the easy ones. I don't think you'll see another reduction in tariffs. And my own firm belief is that you shouldn't. Because if we're talking about tariffs being reduced for financial inclusion, it's not only the banks that contribute to financial inclusion. The telcos are a big contributor to financial inclusion, and they haven't reduced any tariffs. So I really don't see why banks are the only ones who should reduce tariffs to push financial inclusion. So I really don't see a reason for it. AMCON, I don't believe the AMCON levy is going away after 10 years because I'm not sure that it's funded to the point where it can go away. I'm not sure the amount will be increased or the levy percentage will increase, but I think it will stay. I will then go to the Habari license. The Habari license we have, or the AIP, is a switching and processing license. It allows us to do obviously a lot more than just merchant acquiring or create a payment gateway. But you'll have to forgive me if I won't say a lot more on this call about that, because we are ready and we do know what we're planning to do. It's a bit more than merchant acquiring, but I'd rather keep it to myself at this point. In terms of PSB, that we talk about risk, what collaboration, my answer is we'll have to see. We'll have to wait and see. It's early days. The PSB telcos haven't taken off. Will there be areas of collaboration? Will there be areas of synergy? Only time will tell. So I think it'd be very difficult for me to say to you categorically now there'll be collaboration, because I don't even understand or know what strategy they're going to come up with. So, but if the room for collaboration is there, I'm sure we'll look at it.
Thank you very much. The next question is from Abdurov Arimo Bello of WSTC Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon. Earlier during the presentation, you mentioned about cost-to-income ratio and the need to grow your revenue to expand bottom line. But with a significant portion of your interest-bearing asset in special bills, I'm somewhat worried about interest income growth. So I'd just like to ask how you intend to grow your net interest margin in 2022, and what will be the catalyst to the 5% return on assets guidance for 2022. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. It's kind of what I've been saying. We are taking a position that some of that CRR on special bills will go into earning assets, and that it's not possible for 60% of our LCY deposits to remain in CRR and special bills. And that as time progresses in this year, some of it will find its way into loans and maybe treasury bills that are higher than 0.5. And that is why we believe the interest rates will go up and the NIM will improve, because we do not see a situation where a bank can continue to operate where 60% of its LCY deposits are sterilized in CRR and special bills, and that there will be, even as we grow the customer deposits, which we will do this year, as you can see, we have a guidance of 25%, it will find its way into higher earning assets from where they have been today, and that's where the interest income growth will come from. So we're taking a position as to what we think will happen.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder again, if you wish to ask a question, just press star and then one on your touchtone phone or on the keypad on your screen. You will hear a confirmation tone that you have joined. We also ask that you limit your questions to three only. The next question is from Tunde Ogunloye of SBG Securities.
Thank you again, and thank you for taking my question. So on the discounts and recoverable income, I was referring to the page 223 in your financial statement, note 15, the fifth line item. I saw that the discounts and recoverable income grew from 13 billion to 23 billion. And you mentioned in the notes that included is non-debatable portion of digital earnings. I just wanted to understand what that means and what that represents, if you could shed more light on that. My next question is, your peers seem to have resized their loan book during the period. And given your expectation of increase in interest rate environment, are you going to be repricing your loan book as well? And by what percentage points will you be repricing your loan book? And the next question is to know what was responsible for the quarter-on-quarter jump in your impairment charges. And looking at your e-banking revenue, there seems to be a significant growth. I would also like to know which channel is driving that particular growth. And if you could also give a quick update on the quick credit. I know you've mentioned in previous call that it was paused for a while, just to know if it has been resumed now. Thank you.
Look, you talked about repricing of loan book. I actually don't see an opportunity, and I think I mentioned this earlier on, as to repricing of loan books. You can't really reprice quality loan books up at this time because they're intervention funds at 5%. They're commercial papers, they're bonds you can do. So I don't think for your quality loans, you can really reprice them up at this time. E-banking, I think if you look at the presentation, you will see that the real growth in e-banking is coming from mobile banking, which is up about 88%. USSD has kind of tapered to about 22%. So your growth is really coming from the mobile banking side of things. The question on footnotes, I will let Banji answer that.
Okay, thank you, GCO. Like you've explained, we have recoveries in the sum of 9.6 billion in that sum. Then we have 3.5 billion, which we call non-vertible commissions, which are basically yet income and just income. The portion of digital earnings, which are not subject to VAT. Then the last portion is what we earn in terms of rebates from correspondent banks. When we channel transactions to our correspondent banks, we earn commissions from them. So the three components is what make up the other income, which we call discount and recoverables. So, and the mark jump is because economies open up post when COVID impact wanes. So we expect this to continue even in 2022. Thank you.
Sorry, and then there was a final question about why the impairments went down. Well, as you know, if you, your risk, when you're calculating your ECL model, if the macros are improving, which they are over last year, then you will see some of your risk, your loan impairments coming down based upon your assessment of risk.
Thank you, sir. The next question is from Brad Verbitsky of Equinox Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. So my question is with respect to your guidance, and I'm trying to understand whether sort of my modeling is in error or whether there's some aspects of your guidance that don't add up. So when I put in a 25% ROE and 10% loan growth and into my model, I get a sort of a much higher PBT number than the number that you have. So I was wondering if sort of all of your guidance is supposed to add up to a sort of a coherent number, or whether you're guiding different things differently.
Well, no, everything derives from our balance sheet, but there will be things in the PBT that we might have taken in that you might not have. We might look at what will happen to CRR, for example, which has a cost. There might be regulatory costs in our guidance that we've put in that you might have omitted, but I'm sure we'll be more than happy to go through your modeling with it. But the one thing that could be different between what you have and what we have is that we build like unforeseen possible regulatory costs into our model.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. The next question is from Damilola Olupona of Chapel Hill Denham. Please go ahead.
All right, thank you very much for taking my questions. I joined the meeting a bit late, so pardon me if my questions are repetitive. The first question is, I would like to find out what the projected split would be between the banking subsidiary and the newly set up subsidiaries. What would the earnings split be, or what would the projected earnings split be? And secondly, I would like you to speak to your retail loan book because the last conference call you hosted, you had mentioned that you saw some pressures, you know, from the quick credit side, and I just wanted to speak to that a bit. Then I would like to find out what your digital lending, what's the size of your digital lending book, and if you can provide further context as to the percentage contribution to earnings, you know, that's from digital lending. And beyond the scope of your current holdco structure, are you looking to explore other opportunities in the financial service space? And I mean, over the near to medium term, should we be looking out for further acquisitions or merger in the pension and asset management space? Those are my questions for now.
Okay, I have to first tell you something. I've answered all these questions, so you'll have to forgive me if I'm a bit brief because all these questions have been answered already. The revenue split is very simple. We're hoping that the bank in Nigeria will account for 70%, banks outside Nigeria 28%, and for this year, non-banking subsidiaries 2% because we only expect them to run for about 6 months in the year. We bought these subsidiaries in February. We're going through different integration, different audits, so we think you'll see a full running and that it's a good place to start. Just like you mentioned, and if you look at our financials, you will see that the NPLs on retail went up. That's because we are seeing some pressure from the retail loan book. But like I mentioned earlier on, that doesn't really deter us because we build that into our model. And the yields on retail loans allows us to compensate for whatever losses we've made. But what we do is we take the data we have that we have, and then we tweak what the criteria is. I'm not sure we track our loan book by digital loans. If you look, you will see that what it is that our retail loans are about 11% of our loan book. In there, you'll see the breakup of quick credit, max advance. So we won't call them digital loans. Actually, what we try to do is make sure that all our retail loans are straight through processing, which means you can access them online. So most of that you will see where putting on a platform where you can access it. So we wouldn't call it digital loans. It's the processing of it that is digital, and that's what we're doing to most of our loan book. In terms of what are the businesses, I think we're going to try to be focused, and we're going to try for now to focus on the three businesses which we've told people we're going to go into, which is the asset management business, the PFA, which is concluded, the payment business, which hopefully will be concluded soon, and that as we consolidate and grow market share, we will start to expand in those. Today, I wouldn't say any more mergers and acquisitions are in our lives, and that we are going to try to cross-sell organically and grow these businesses from what we have built to date. So maybe if we think the day comes, but for right now, we're focusing on growing the businesses we've acquired and leveraging what we have. And that's going to be the strategy of those businesses.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, a final reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. The next question is from Rona Kagadia of MG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Sorry, last questions from me. One of my questions is on your staff expenses. If I look at your staff expenses, have consistently been flat or been declining the last 4 or 5 years. The number of staff has been declining, and at the same time, this, you know, the salaries per staff has either been declining or flattish. You know, given the current inflationary environment and taking into consideration the bank's expansion outlook, how sustainable is that line item? Should we see a meaningful turnaround in staff expenses going forward? And then the second one, I think when we spoke sometime last year, you're saying, you know, you might reconsider share buybacks, especially in light of Dangote's buyback program. Has there been any further progress on those discussions, and could you potentially consider share buyback at current valuations?
Okay, let me start with staff expenses. Staff expenses, I would say you should expect them to go up because we have increased salaries in order to kind of dampen our attrition. So I think staff expenses will go up. Also, we are in to expand, we need to kind of do more hiring. And so the numbers will go up and the salaries have gone up. So I think you'll see and you should see a pickup in staff expenses. Truthfully, I have to be honest with you. We've been a bit too busy trying to do acquisitions, settle the holding company down, where we really haven't had time to think too much about the share buyback. And we haven't really engaged on it. That's the honest truth. We've been a bit distracted doing all these other things. But as we settle them down, if these market conditions continue, it's definitely a conversation that I think a lot of banks and boards will probably need to have.
Thank you very much, sir. So we have no further questions in the queue. Do you have any closing comments?
No, I'd just like to say thank you to everybody who dialed in. And yeah, and everybody have a good evening. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that then concludes this conference call, and you may now disconnect.